Good morning, I'm Flo Conway. We are not what we know, but what we are willing to learn. This quote reflects her life, beginning with her mother and father, Margaret Mead and Gregory Bateson, who were among the foremost contributors to the proliferation and development of cybernetics. She watched their interactions, learned, and captured their lively associations, especially in her book, Our Own Metaphor, which chronicles the early years of cybernetics and its pioneering figures. And she brought all of this forward, expanded it with her ideas and spirit in her own prolific contributions, her books, writings, teaching that have made her a beloved figure worldwide. It is my really great pleasure to introduce our keynote speaker, Mary Catherine Bateson.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Catherine.
Think of this as an experiment to find out how fully you have internalized cybernetics. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Okay. Well, I'm going to cheat on the program because I won't be here for the session of anecdotes about Norbert Wiener, and probably won't be here. And there is one anecdote that I've used for many years that was pivotal in my decision to accept the invitation to come and speak to you all. And I've used it again and again in talks that I've given. It describes Wiener being driven as a passenger in a car by a young man who I imagine as a postdoc at MIT to some seminar or event. And the streets of Cambridge are not notable for being efficiently cleared after snow and avoiding excess parking and so on. Anyhow, a child comes out. Fortunately, the car is going very slowly, but knocks the child over. The postdoc stops the car, leaps out, rushes to the child. She's okay. She's grazed her knee. She has a scratch and she's shaken up. There's a corner drugstore. He goes in. He gets alcohol and a Band-Aid and puts it on and buys a lollipop, which he gives to the child. And there's a payphone in the corner drugstore where he finds out her name and her mother's address and takes the child home, living in the same block. Comes back, gets into the car. Oh, phew. Sigh of relief. And here, may or may not actually have happened, but the way the story goes, Dr. Wiener says, "You have hit a child with your car before." He says, "My God, no. I was so upset and shaken by it. That was terrible. I hope nothing like that ever happens again." And Dr. Wiener is said to have said, "Then how did you know what to do?" Uh, Wiener has always seemed like a paradoxical figure to me. And my memories are the memories of a child, of a very peculiar looking person who turned up repeatedly coming from his New Hampshire home to the New Hampshire home of Lawrence K. Frank. My parents basically moved into a dual household with the Frank family in New York at the beginning of World War II. Gregory went off to the South Pacific. My mother, Margaret Mead, had the bottom two floors of the building. Larry Frank had the top three floors with his seven children, six at that point. And it was a joint household that was their way of mobilizing for the war, actually, because the adults knew that they were going to be traveling. They were going to be away. And in the summer, the Frank household went to the Lakes region of New Hampshire, where there were a scattering of intellectuals attracted there by the Frank family, people involved both with the Macy conferences on cybernetics and the Macy conferences on group process that were taking place at the same time, shorter period, less famous, some of the same people. And periodically, Norbert Wiener would just appear. He wouldn't telephone. He'd have a new idea that he wanted to talk to someone about, and he would appear and talk for at length to Larry Frank or to my mother or to Gregory if Gregory was there. He was there less. And talk and talk and talk and talk and then go away. And as a child, I mean, there were many distinguished and brilliant people who came and went in that household, and extraordinary conversations took place. What I noticed in people's responses to Norbert Wiener was a complicated mixture of profound respect and deference, really. They wanted to hear what he had to say, and exasperation, and his total lack of a sense of when to say it and how to say it in order to communicate effectively. And I noticed that the Wikipedia article on Norbert Wiener takes it as more or less given that he was a case of Asperger. He was certainly a case of very peculiar early education. He suffered from a father with pronounced ideas of how to educate this brilliant child. But what is so striking about Wiener, to me, retrospectively, is whatever the source of his social ineptitude, of his limited empathy, and sometimes difficulty of understanding whether he was communicating to people, whether they knew what he was saying even, is he knew it. He was puzzled by how the postdoc knew how to behave. How did he know, put "no" in quotes, that a lollipop would comfort a child? How did he know that he should call the mother, that he should take the child home, and so on and so forth? It seems to me that his perplexity about human relations, his lack of skill, is something we need to learn from. Because it's directly connected with the concerns that he had about the impact that cybernetics might have on human society. For instance, he worried about the creation of unemployment. People would lose their jobs. He worried about it making war more destructive. Well, yes, indeed. All of that happened. He worried about being engaged in the creation of gadgetry that really should be seen as a new ontology. And I think we should be more worried than we now are. I did my little good morning demonstration to point out that we can talk until we're blue in the face about communication theory and the need for feedback and so on. But unless you grew up in the South or went to a Pentecostal church, you're not used to saying good morning back when someone above and in front of you says it, right? We in fact don't live in terms of the interactional realities that we talk about. And above all, the academy doesn't. It isn't just that cybernetics has slipped out of focus for many people. The whole concept of interdisciplinary cooperation has slipped. Everyone I know of who's thought seriously about American education has tried to bring better communication between the disciplines, and it fails again and again and again. It's not what we want. We don't want to be able to communicate. Well, we had Adam and Eve to begin the morning with. So I'll just take us a few pages on in the book of Genesis to the Tower of Babel, the myth of the Tower of Babel. You know, Joseph Campbell had a wonderful definition of a myth. A myth is something that never happened, but is always true. Okay, the story of the Tower of Babel. In those days, among the human population of the earth, there was only one language. And they got together and they decided they would build a tower that would reach up to God. God looked down on this and did not approve. So what the myth says is that he confounded the languages of the people of the earth, so they were no longer able to work together on the project. And they scattered, speaking different languages, and from that comes all the diversity of human cultures and linguistic groups and so on. We still live in a world of confounded languages and symbol systems. In recent years, I've been on the advisory council of NCAR, the National Center for Atmospheric Research, where so much of the work on Earth system science is being done, which is derived in many ways from from the understandings of cybernetics, and where the computing capacity, they've just built a new UCAR computer, you know, just teraflops of data. Massive parallel processing of data coming in. And it's clear that to understand what is happening to the planet, we have to think in terms of concepts like homeostasis and how it can be disrupted. And it is clear that we are in a situation of huge danger that we are currently unable to discuss. We cannot, either within this country or in international forums, arrive at a coordinated plan of how to respond and how to change ourselves. We're stuck with the command and control model of let's fix the planet, build dikes, mirrors, what have you. You don't do it by fixing some object. You do it by changing the interaction. How do you change the interaction? We have to change ourselves. Cybernetics not only offered a new ontology, it has demanded a new epistemology, which is really the piece of it where my father was most involved. Thank you. All things come to those who wait. At the moment, departments are still separate. The United States government is incapable of adopting policies moving forward. Large numbers of people are successfully in denial that we are massively damaging the planet on which we depend. And this after the description of the planet, both by folks like NCAR, but also with metaphors like the Gaia hypothesis, as a living system with certain capacities for self-correction, which can fail. Living systems can die. Our planet can die. And we find ourselves in the dilemma of the people building the Tower of Babel. Incidentally, Babel is Babylon, otherwise known as Iraq these days. And of course, from it we get Babel, Babel, the inability to speak Hebrew, Leval Bel. Okay, so there it is. Cybernetics basically came out of World War II. The sense of shared danger, difficult coordination, working together, the need to find a mechanism that would sustain peace, that would be self-corrective, the need to find new tools of communication between nations, uh, I have to agree that in the early work on cybernetics, in the understanding of really of the unity of life on this planet, the tremendous complexity of interconnections and interdependencies, lies the point of focus that must be carried into education, into everyday experience. I wish I could say, what are we going to do about the schools so that children don't come out of school fixated on this command and control model, this lineal causation model? The fact is that if cybernetics arrived at a new description of what is, a new ontology, that necessarily entails a new ethic, a profound rethinking of what we do, why we do it, and how we do it together. So it's not surprising that the general public, which is in denial, doesn't want to hear that this is what cybernetics offers. That cybernetics is a challenge to look at the world we live in as living, interactive, growing, learning, changing over time, and requiring that we behave not as masters of that world, but as parts of that world. That is, after all, one of the first things that happens when you begin to think in terms of systems. Instead of being the owner of whatever it is, a garden or flock of sheep or even a computer, you have to begin to think of yourself as a part of the system and as hopefully learning from the system, adapting to it, evoking some adaptation in the system if it has that capacity. And it's not clear that we can do that in organizations whose whole structure is based on a different epistemology, a different ontology. So that the concept of new Macy conferences makes sense. It's very hard to organize interdisciplinary conferences these days. You know why? I've been a dean. And we were trying to introduce interdisciplinary courses as part of the general education core of the curriculum, instead of everybody thinking of their majors, what they were in college for. Let's get some integration going here. Only trouble was the senior faculty couldn't be bothered. And the junior faculty, who were interested in interdisciplinary stuff, I had the responsibility of warning that if they were to cooperate with people in other departments in teaching interdisciplinary courses, their colleagues might not recommend them for tenure. And in fact, this has been a concern of people interested in cybernetics. How does it fit the classification system? How does it fit the promotion system, which is designed for quite a different epistemology, an epistemology in which knowledge is advanced by separating topics from each other and focusing on them narrowly. As I've thought back and tried to remember the presence of Norbert Wiener in New Hampshire, because there were other children, and I tended to be off with the other children. I have, and from all that I've read, I still have a paradoxical sense about this man. On the one hand, great brilliance, which we're celebrating, and I think I should say an inconclusive outcome, that the word cybernetics now just means digital computing in most people's minds. Systems theory is mainly belongs to business schools, as far as I can tell. He has changed the behavior of the world. But has he changed the cognition of the world? Have we arrived at the point of looking at ourselves as parts of larger systems on which we depend? And have we taken from this work the sense of the living ocean, the living forest, the Arctic and Antarctic ice, our role in this complex system of the life of our planet? If refocusing on Norbert Wiener, we can remember that he cared, he worried about communication. He worried about the effect of his work on human life. Would it be positive or would it be negative? I think we are at a point where we need the positive side, the ontological vision, and the epistemological vision to become part of our shared human experience.